The United States v. Rogers. Is the appellant ready? Please proceed.
Chief Judge Erman, judges of the court, may it please the court. I'm Lieutenant Philip Jones and I represent the appellant, Petty Officer Matthew Rogers. Chief Judge Erman, with the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Granted.
There are three reasons the military judge abused her discretion when she denied the defense challenge against Commander K for implied bias. First, in a blackout sexual assault case, Commander K erroneously believed a person who suffers memory loss due to drinking cannot consent. Second, Commander K has been personally affected by sexual assault in her family. And third, Commander K is too closely associated with the service's efforts to combat sexual assault in response to political pressure. Starting with her beliefs about consent, she espoused a strongly held belief that a person in a blackout can never consent. And blackout was the defense theory in this case, that the complaining witness had consented to sexual activity but did not remember it. And Commander K's bias would have caused her to reject that theory out of hand.
But isn't your real argument there not so much that was her position at the time, because she said that she would bend to the military judge's instructions if they were contrary to her beliefs. Isn't the crux of your argument that she was never given those further instructions? Because just based on the fact that she said, this is what I believe, but then she also said, but if the military judge tells me I'm wrong, I'll follow whatever the military judge, you know, that may well be enough.
Yes, Your Honor, in part. There's really two parts of the problem with her saying, I'll follow the military judge's instructions. So the first part is the military judge during voir dire never drilled down further and told this member to refute her erroneous belief. Just relied simply on I'll follow the military judge's instruction. The second part of that is that the military judge's instruction, while not technically incorrect, didn't address the issue of blackout or her belief that a person in blackout could not consent. It simply recited the statutory language, which is vague enough that a person untrained in the law could read that and fit her belief about blackout under that, despite the fact that that's not standard under the law.
This comes up as an implied bias case. But don't both one and two go to actual bias or nothing? One is alleged opinions that are erroneous, that presumably either don't answer to the judge or the judge didn't properly instruct. Two is family problems that have some sort of a sexual nature. Don't both of those really go to actual bias or nothing?
Yes, Your Honor, they go to actual bias, and actual bias could have been a reason to exclude this member.
But actual bias isn't before us.
No, Your Honor, but they also go to implied bias. So under implied bias, the question is would a reasonable member of the public in possession of the facts have a concern of bias for this member? And that is, despite a disclaimer of bias by the member, would a reasonable member of the public still have a problem with that? So this member did disclaim bias and said she followed the military judge's instruction. So the question is, would a reasonable member of the public, looking at her beliefs about consent, and her statement that she would put the burden of proof on the defense to show that a person in a blackout could consent. So contrary to the presumption of innocence and the burdens of proof, she would put the burden on the defense. So although she said later, I'll follow the military judge's instruction under the law, the question is whether someone with those beliefs in her position would still be biased.
But didn't the defense actually suggest the proper response when she asked for a definition of what does competent mean?
Your Honor, the parties and the judge did not offer a definition of competence other than use your own common sense. So,
but I thought that came from the that was a suggestion of the defense.
I don't know that, Your Honor. It may be. But it doesn't particularly matter. The problem is,
well, it might matter as far as whether or not that issue was waived.
Yes, Your Honor. So With regard to the instruction, it's not a question of whether that instruction was wrong. The question is, back in voir dire, this member had a belief, was never asked to refute that belief specifically, and as late as deliberations is asking questions that show that she still doesn't understand. So it really just goes to show that misunderstanding, that confusion for this member, lingers on through to deliberation. And the military judge at voir dire needed to address the issue head on. And the fact that questions were still being asked by this member at deliberation shows that she didn't do enough. So it's not a question of whether the instruction was correct or whether the members going into deliberations were correctly instructed. It's that this member's prior held beliefs and biases would leave her to misunderstand those instructions. And in ruling on this issue, the only analysis the military judge made on the record was to say this member said she'd follow the law. The military judge didn't address how this member's beliefs might affect public perception. She had previously recited the implied bias standard, but in ruling on an implied bias question, she really gave an actual bias analysis that the member said she would follow the instruction, not any reference to public perception. So moving to Commander Kay's family situation.
Well, didn't she say that she ought to be the best person to sit because she knew so much? Doesn't that go to public perception?
This member said that, yes, Your Honor. So
yeah.
This member's personal opinion of her bias was that she was an unbiased member. But a member is not in the best position to determine or their own bias or lack
of
bias.
Well, no, nor is a member in the best position to determine the law.
No, Your Honor, but a member's strongly held erroneous beliefs about the law can be a source of implied bias, such as in the Woods case.
Well, I'd say that's actual bias, but then we're back to where we were. I mean, if a member is inflexible, that's actual bias.
Yes, Your Honor. So similarly,
which isn't before us.
No, Your Honor. But similarly to the Woods case, the member in that case had a misunderstood belief about the burden of proof and the presumption of innocence in military law. And that member agreed that they would follow the instructions of the military judge on the law. Nevertheless, there was an implied bias problem in that case. Similar here, this member said, I'll follow the military judge's instructions, but the military judge never drilled down enough during voir dire to really rehabilitate her, and so a reasonable member of the public would believe that she's still...
What should the judge have done?
Your Honor, the military judge should have addressed the issue of alcohol and consent directly with this member and said, either your belief is wrong or will you follow my instruction when I tell you...
Well, but doesn't that go back to the contention that the instruction is incorrect or incomplete? And you just said it isn't a matter of whether the instruction is correct or not. Now you're saying the judge should have done that.
No, Your Honor, not an instruction in voir dire with the member in discussing this member's beliefs. The military judge didn't give this member enough opportunity to be rehabilitated, just accepted a I'll follow the law answer without addressing the basis of the bias.
Well, Counsel, you earlier said that when the military judge was talking about implied bias, she didn't apply it to this situation. She just stated the rule. But the military judge said, I believe that her entire statement, taken in context, would not leave a reasonable member of the public as to fairness of her impartiality. I mean, that seems to be an analysis and a conclusion.
Your Honor, that's the conclusion, but it's not an analysis. So she didn't describe how this member's answers lead to that question, except to say, I've listened to all her answers, and I've decided that a reasonable member of the public wouldn't have a problem with it.
Well, she said that taking her entire her statement in context, I mean, she's saying exactly what she's doing, and then she's saying the result from that.
Yes,
I mean, how much? I guess the question is, how much do they have to put down?
They have to show their work somehow, Your Honor. So what this military judge did was recite, and in that quote that you just pointed our attention to, basically recites the standard for implied bias and says, I find that she's met this standard. But they did not say why. So with regard to the concerns about her, you know, her position in the Coast Guard, her family history, or her answers about consent. She didn't discuss why a reasonable member of the public would have no problem with this, just that they wouldn't. And that's just the legal conclusion with no analysis.
You need all three of these grounds in order to prevail, or could we turn it over on one?
You could turn it over on any one, Your Honor, but this court looks at the totality of the circumstances, and looking at each of these three grounds together, it causes even more concern. Each one of them separately raises a serious question of implied bias. When you look at them together under the totality of the circumstances, it raises even more questions. So with regard to Commander Kay's family situation, she personally experienced the damage that sexual assault can do when her own brother victimized her nieces. She also fostered children that were prior victims and saw through them the damage that it can do. And it continues to impact her family. She said she doesn't see her brother much because she doesn't want him around her kids. She called him a pedophile. Now, she said these things made her more impartial because she knows, based on that, what a serious accusation sexual assault is. But that doesn't really make any sense when you look at the totality of her answers, because she believes her brother was guilty. So the damage that was done to her family was done by him, not by a false accuser. So you also have to consider what would happen.
Well, didn't she also cite another situation in which someone was falsely accused?
Yes, Your Honor. She also mentioned
it cuts both ways.
Yes, Your Honor, but conflicting bias is not an offsetting bias. So she had...
Huh? You lost me there.
So she said that she had seen, in a separate incident, had seen a military member who was falsely accused.
Right.
So that doesn't necessarily offset a bias from seeing her brother do damage to her personal family. And the personal experience of a close family member committing this crime versus the detached professional experience of seeing this play out at work is very different.
Counsel, on that point, in your view, could Commander Kay have been rehabilitated, or were her family experiences that you're just referring to something that simply was going to make the appearance, the applied bias, present no matter what was done?
With regard to just the family experiences, maybe, Your Honor, but that's not the situation we have here. We have a person who has these family experiences, who has this bias regarding what the law is, and then also has this professional source of bias. So
this wasn't a case involving children, was it?
I'm sorry, I didn't...
This case didn't involve children, did it?
The case at bar did not involve children, no, Your Honor, but it did involve...
So what does her brother's pedophilia have to do with anything?
It has everything to do with it. It still involves a allegedly vulnerable victim. In the case of Rogers, of a vulnerable victim because of alcohol, supposedly being preyed on by someone whose power she was completely under. Similarly to how children are completely vulnerable to predations by their parents. It's that same kind of circumstance. So the age is different, but the crime is the same. And in her ruling on implied bias, the military judge did not address the family situation at all. It's simply not mentioned.
So what would have to have been done for her to be rehabilitated?
Your Honor, the military judge could have asked more questions about the effect on her family. So she said, in answering one of your questions, that she didn't see her brother very much because she didn't want him around her children, and she called him a pedophile. So things that could raise a red flag that this still affects this person, this is still potentially a source of bias, this needs to be looked closer at. And the military judge really didn't go into this very much at all with her, except to ask how many years ago it was, which it was about 6 or 7 years ago, which really isn't that long when you're looking at a serious crime like this and its impact to a family. And so finally, also, Commander Kay is too close to the service's response to political pressure to deal harshly with sexual assault cases. So as much as the government may try to minimize it, she's responsible for coming up with a comprehensive plan to combat sexual assault. It wasn't just a minor collateral. It was a subset of her primary duties, which were leadership. And she thought that sexual assault was a leadership issue that fell into that.
But didn't she balance that out with her statements that she was concerned that some people in the military may feel politically pressured to take action and that they shouldn't be doing that?
Yes, Your Honor, she did. But she also said, based on her professional experience, and she recited a significant amount of scholarship in the area of sexual assault, that she thought that 98% of sexual assault allegations were true, and only 2% could be false. So she would come to a sexual assault case believing there's a 98% chance that it was true and that the person should be convicted. And her misunderstandings about the law of consent and involving alcohol were based on her professional experience, research, training in the Coast Guard. So as much as she would say, I would try to be impartial based on all this pressure, her position also brought a lot of other baggage with it. So that doesn't completely answer that concern. So this court reviews implied bias based on the totality of the circumstances. And if each of these concerns alone were not enough, stepping back and looking at it from the totality of her answers, all of the causes for concern, it's clear that she shouldn't have sat on this panel. If there are no further questions, that concludes my argument.
Thank you, counsel. We'll now hear from the government.
May it please the court. Good morning, Chief Judge. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Lieutenant Lars Oakmark, along with my co-counsel, Lieutenant Commander Amanda Lee. We represent the United States. Now, Your Honors, in this case, there is overwhelming evidence that the appellant tricked bar patrons, bar staff, and used his official position as a military member to take his victim from the bar to his hotel room where he committed sexual acts against her.
What do we care about the facts? We're talking about a challenge to a member.
Yes, Your Honor, and this court has a very high standard for implied bias. This court has said if the military judge recognizes the implied bias standard, puts a liberal grant mandate on the record, and provides reasoning, that instances in which that military judge's instances where the military judge will be reversed are indeed rare. And in this case, Your Honors, the military judge did all three. She put that standard on the record. The implied bias applied to all of her challenges, is what she said. And also, she cited the liberal grant mandate and also the closed case analysis and actually granted a challenge against CWO2E based on, she saw it was a closed case and granted that challenge based on her liberal grant mandate. So obviously, she knew what a closed case was and when to grant those liberal challenges.
But isn't it a little bit troubling the way this case evolved? I mean, the military judge first got up and gave the standard questions to the members on voir dire, and one of them was, if your belief of the law is different than as I instruct you, you know, will you be able to follow mine? And all of the members, including this commander, said yes. And then on individual voir dire, she said that her understanding of the law was that if you're too drunk to remember a situation because of alcohol, you are too drunk to consent to sex. And there was an exchange there, and she basically told the defense, you know, you're really going to have to convince me of that because that's what I think the law says. And then at that point, nothing further was instructed to her as to what that capacity meant as far as the ability to consent under alcohol. That was the primary question in this case. I mean, that's what this case came down to. And it appears that she went into deliberations with presumably this false understanding of what that burden was. She was the president of the panel. Isn't that a little bit of cause for concern?
Well, Your Honor, I would start off by saying that military members aren't charged with knowing the law when they walk into the courtroom. That's not what this court has said. This was a legal concept which, taking it apart, yes, she probably put, in that statement that she made, she put the burden on the defense.
But the statement presumably wasn't right either.
Exactly, and the appellant tries to say that she's such an expert in sexual assault and there's implied bias. Well, if she was such an expert, how come she got consent wrong? I mean, she obviously wasn't an expert. She was wrong in that. And I think a reasonable member of the public would take a look at that voir dire and say, well, she obviously knew she was wrong. Defense counsel, trial counsel, definitely let her know, you are misinformed, you are wrong. Are you able to follow the judge's instructions? Or she said yes twice. Defense counsel asked her once, she said yes, and also trial counsel. So she was rehabilitated, not by the military judge.
Okay, that's fine. But then where in the record did the judge correct her on that standard?
Your Honor, so at all times, the military judge told the members that, and Commander K specifically, that the burden was on the prosecution. Incapable of consenting was an element of the offense that the prosecution had to prove, and she gave that instruction. At all times, it is the prosecution's burden. Also, evidence of consent is relevant to whether the prosecution has proven everything beyond a reasonable doubt. Joint Appendix 211. So at all times, the mistake of fact as a consent defense and also incapable of consenting was always on the prosecution.
Well, but she gave the plain vanilla instruction.
Yes, Your Honor.
Here you've got a specific question, a specific issue, and the plain vanilla instruction doesn't cover it. So
yes,
where
Your
does
Honor.
That leave us?
If she went in there, if the commander went in there thinking that this woman was too drunk to remember, she was too drunk to consent, and no one corrected her of that misapprehension, don't you think that had an effect on her position in deliberations?
Your Honor, I believe the military judge's instructions, again, taking her voir dire, she knew she was wrong. The military judge instructed her that everything, the prosecution bears the burden in this case. And also, the defense never requested any sort of curative instruction. I believe that's very telling that the defense thought that this member was okay. They believed that she had been rehabilitated and that she knew she was wrong. Now, looking at what the military judge did here, Your Honors, I believe the military judge should be given that proper deference that this court gives. She described that test for implied bias, and again, she put her reasoning on the record, and this court has never said it has to be a dissertation. It has to be some lengthy analysis. That's not the case. And in the recent
counsel, in regard to that, the military judge said, referring to Commander K, quote, she had every opportunity to say that she would not consider my instruction. She did not say that, end quote. So is that the standard you think we should apply, that a panel member or a prospective panel member has to affirmatively take the opportunity to express that they would not consider a military judge's instruction?
Your Honor, I think, again, looking at the totality that this court does, I believe it is a factor. And I know that's more probably actual bias, but actual bias creeps into implied bias. And this court has said you have to take a look at the answers. And we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Commander K's answers. So I believe what she said, any disclaimers or anything that she gave the military judge, is in fact something the court should look at. It's not dispositive of any issue, and the government won't say that. But
so let me get down to the point, though. Are you saying that this is the standard that we should apply, that a prospective panel member has to take this opportunity to affirmatively state that he or she would not consider an instruction? That's the standard we should apply.
Again, Your Honors, I don't think it's part of the analysis. Is what the government would say. It's just part of the analysis that you have to look at when you're looking at all the facts. And I think it's a big part if she disclaims any bias and the military judge puts it on the record for implied bias. But again, the military judge also said she put that implied bias. Would there be substantial doubt as to the fairness or impartiality? I'm quoting the military judge, Joint Appendix 085. I believe that her entire statements taken in context would not leave a reasonable member of the public to doubt as to the fairness of her impartiality. So she put the implied bias. She looked at it from the lens of the public and said, I don't think so. This is not a close case. I'm not going to grant your challenge. And she was in the best position to judge the demeanor and also judge her questions, see her in court. And looking at this from a cold appellate record, as this court held in Clay, again, it's hard to look at what the military judge did in retrospect. She was there. This is a very quick process that was going on, and she made her ruling. And again, I think it's telling that she granted that challenge in a close case against another member because she knew how to apply it. She heard everybody else's answers and applied it against another member, but didn't find it in Commander K's case.
Now, it's clear from the record that Commander K was working on the SAPR plan on behalf of command. Was that on behalf of the convening authority in this case?
No, Your Honor. That was not. And again, that collateral duty, by all intents and purposes, she had finished that collateral duty. She was in that collateral duty 3 to 4 months. And just recently...
What was her billet?
It was
her permanent job? Was she some sort of a social actions officer?
Kind of sort of, Your Honor. Actually, I don't fully understand her position. It's a diversity inclusion officer. It's her
sounds
primary
like social
position.
Actions to me, or what we used to call social actions in the 70s. Yeah.
There's probably a social aspect to it, diversity.
Yeah.
I believe it probably does have some social aspect to it. But again, that was her primary duty. If she made that quote about leadership, She was saying, in my primary duty, leadership is my number one, not in my collateral duty. And I believe that that's a, she wasn't, she was kind of, she was just talking about her primary duty. She wasn't kind of, I guess, invoking that collateral duty that she had. And she was in that position 3 to 4 months. This court recently in Castillo said a 90-day relationship between trial counsel and the member wasn't enough. And here, I guess, looking at how much time she spent in the position, that 90 to 120 days isn't enough.
Well, but, I mean, her permanent billet reeks of this stuff. I mean, to say that, well, she's in and out. I mean, she may be in and out of writing this document, but she's a diversity officer. She's a social actions type. I don't think that gets the government very far.
Yes, Your Honor, but in the record, we don't have enough to show what that position was. And looking at the record, that reasonable member looking at the record doesn't have that to look at. So all she said is that was her position, and that's leadership was part of her position. And she believed that it's everybody's duty to prevent sexual assault, which it is. Everybody, all 11 members receive the same Coast Guard training. And I think it's on everybody to prevent it, not just her. And in looking into that plan a little bit more, again, that plan was preventative in nature. It had nothing to do with the response. She specifically said, I'm not a victim advocate. It's not part of my job. And because of the duties that I do, that's why I'm not a victim advocate. She never responded to any individual cases or dealt with individual victims at any time.
That's kind of confusing. I mean, as I read the record, because she did say that she was the Admiral's number one person on prevention and response. And then she said that she didn't personally, she wasn't personally involved in responses, but what are we to take from that? That she was involved in drafting what the responses, the process for responding, or?
Like from the record, Your Honor, that whole plan was about engineering, where to put lights and informing people, hey, when you set your drink down, make sure someone doesn't slip anything in it. I mean, that was it. It had to do with birthing also, where you're placing people in birthing.
But from her responses, she said that she had spent a lot of time studying the area and kept up on current issues in the area. Doesn't that imply that she was involved in more than just the procedures, steps to take to prevent sexual harassment?
Well, Your Honor, again, we don't have the plan to look at, and I really wish we did, because then we could take a look at the plan and actually see what was in there. I mean,
why is that relevant if we've got implied bias issue? That's not what the reasonable member of the public sitting there hearing would have factored into their decision.
Yes, Your Honor, but I think the plan would have been, if you're trying to relate actions that she did, I looked at the Huffington Post and New York Times that's where she got her information from. This 2%.
That wasn't one of the three points that the appellant's counsel made, was it? General knowledge of sexual assault? I mean, I thought that they had three specific points.
And one of them, it's her role in sexual assault. And I was just responding to the chief judge that in her readings, it wasn't tied to that. It wasn't tied to any personal feeling that she had. She wasn't so personally involved in these cases and in sexual assault.
But that's actual bias. That's not implied bias. Going back to one of the chief judge's first questions or first points, assuming that we believe that her understanding of being competent was incorrect, the one that she gave during her voir dire, how did the military judge, did the military judge define competence to overcome her incorrect view of the law?
The military judge or anyone else?
Hey, Your Honor, competence, there was a question from Commander Kay about competence, and I believe that question was never answered.
Well, didn't the military judge tell them to rely on their own common sense or their own understanding of what it meant?
Yes, Your Honor.
So basically told her to rely on her incorrect understanding from the beginning.
Again, Your Honor, going back to the points we've kind of fleshed out already, I think a reasonable member of the public looking at, she knew she was wrong. She knew she was misinformed, and she said that I would follow the military judge's instructions.
But the military judge's instruction was for her to rely on her own understanding.
Where do you get the fact that she knew she was wrong and that she would rely on the military judge's instruction? That instruction from the military judge came before her response about her misunderstanding as to competence.
Well, Your Honor, I think looking at, again, the totality, looking at that voir dire, that exchange with defense counsel and trial counsel, I believe a reasonable member of the public would they would know that Commander K knew she was wrong by what defense counsel was telling her.
Well, can you point that out to me in the record? Because I read that, and I didn't get that impression.
Yes, Your Honor. At Joint Appendix 065 and 66, during the defense's individual, and it was an answer to a question. Defense counsel said, hey, would you be able to listen to the judge's instructions if that wasn't the standard? She said, if the law told me that someone could give consent when they were severely intoxicated, I would, you know, I'd follow the law. And again, at Joint Appendix 073 during trial counsel's rehabilitation, question from trial counsel, you mentioned your understanding of the law regarding substantial incapacitation or incapacitation to the point where one cannot consent. Are you able to disregard what you believe now if the judge instructs you otherwise?
Okay, that's so, the yes. point. That's the point right there. If the judge instructs you otherwise.
They don't take their law from the trial counsel. They take their law from the judge.
Yeah, and the judge told her. And the judge told her otherwise by telling her to rely on her own understanding. I mean, don't you see that that's problematic? I mean, leaving all this other stuff aside, right? Someone comes and all the counsel asked her was, "If you were told, would you disregard?" Well, yes, but she was never told that she was wrong.
Well, again,
she asked the question again, right? Perhaps suspecting that her understanding was wrong based on the trial counsel and the defense counsel's questions of voir dire.
Your Honor, I think the best instructions that we have is, again, being capable of consenting was at all times the prosecution's burden to prove. There's also the circumstantial evidence where you can look at circumstantial evidence for evidence of consent. And again, that was given to them. That's it. I apologize, Your Honor. I did not have an adjoint appendix, but it is at page 22 of the seventh volume of the record. Well, you have incapable of consenting was an element of the offense, and at all times, it was, again, placed on the prosecution. At no time was the defense ever. This isn't the old, you know, prior to 28 June 2012, where it was an affirmative defense, and maybe the defense had some burden. But no, that's not the offenses that were in front of the court. At all times, again, it was the prosecution's burden. And it was very clear to her that it was the prosecution had to show it. It wasn't the defense's burden to show that somehow she was capable of consenting. It was the prosecution's.
Yeah, to follow up on that, though, we've discussed the instructions. Is there actually anything in the factual record that would clarify that you could consent while you're blacked out? Is, I mean, any expert that said anything like that, anything that would have suggested to Commander K that her she was wrong with her initial perception?
Yes, Your Honor, there was. And at this point in time, I'm ill-prepared. I cannot give you those record sites to point you exactly where that is. But there was cross-examination of an expert, Heavy Cross, where that did come out, that could have changed her mind. And again, I apologize. I do not have those record sites. But that was given to her. So factually, yes. But again, no instruction from the military judge on that exact point. But again, there was no curative instruction asked. And I know I keep going on about this, but I believe it's a very important point that this court should take, that if it was so important to the defense, how come they didn't request instruction about it? And you don't have it in the record because they believe Commander K at that point was an okay member and that she would be able to follow the law. And
well, they asked that she be removed from the panel, so they didn't think she was an OPM member.
Again, that was after. So after all, the evidence is heard. So it's already, the panel's in place, and this was afterwards. They never asked for curative instruction from the military judge.
Is it really the defense's job to protect the record and make sure that all the right instructions are given, or is it government's job?
I believe it's on everyone, Your Honor. I mean, probably more so with the government, but again, it's all counsel's job to make sure the record is going to be covered in those areas. And
so are you essentially arguing forfeiture then on the part of the accused?
It could turn into forfeiture, Your Honor, but again, I listened to Castillo, and I don't think this court played very well to that forfeiture argument. So again, I'm not going to put forth that forfeiture argument.
Well, isn't challenging her enough to preserve the issue?
Yes, Your Honor, and that's okay. In Castillo, that's what this court found, so I wasn't going to go into that area. And then finally, Your Honor, looking at the cumulative review of this, I think you need to look at Rome. And in Rome, this court found one major issue that tipped the scales, and it was the defense counsel severely embarrassing that member during voir dire. And this court found that one point tipped the scales. So individually, they found one factor, one heavy factor that weight and that cumulative analysis. And here, we don't have that one factor that's going to tip those scales in the appellant's favor. If there are no further questions?
I'm not sure I understand your point. We're looking at the totality of the circumstances. So I'm not sure I understand your point about saying that there was a tipping point. That doesn't mean that there always has to be some meteor in the middle of this that anyone can point to, does it?
No, Your Honor, but again, looking at Rome is one of the better cases that this court has come out with cumulative analysis. And looking at that, there was just one factor that again, tipped those scales in the balance. So again, I would just remind this court. And also the very high standard. You look at numerous cases. In Castile, there was at least three areas. In Townsend, there was at least five where that the law student, the father was a career police officer, applied to be a prosecutor, and this court didn't find applied bias. It's a very high standard. And also in Strand, where you had the convening authority's son sitting on the panel, and this court still did not find applied bias. So it's a very high standard that this court has to look at. If there are no further questions, the government would just ask that this court take a look at the record in context and affirm the decision of the Coast Guard Court. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The court thanks counsel for both parties. The matter is submitted, and the court will be in. Oh, I'm sorry. Want rebuttal?
So, very briefly, the defense was never satisfied that this member was rehabilitated, nor was it the defense's burden to rehabilitate a member where the defense had brought out on the record issues of bias, and then the trial counsel and the military judge failed to dig in and make this member refute her erroneous beliefs and dig in further with her sources of bias and to explain why they weren't really a source of bias. So the defense was never pleased with this member, objected and preserved that issue. And there's simply nothing in the record to suggest this member knew that she was wrong. There's plenty in the record to suggest that she said, well, I'll follow the military judge if the military judge tells me I'm wrong, and the military judge never did. The military judge abdicated her responsibility to let that member take an opportunity to tell her that she still misunderstood, when it was that military judge's job then and there to dig in and tell her she was wrong and either clear up this problem or not. She didn't. It's still in the record, and it was the government's responsibility to preserve the record if they wanted this member on the court. Your Honor, in response to your question about expert testimony, there was expert testimony about alcohol and consent, but this member was preconditioned to reject the defense evidence about alcohol and consent because she believed that under the law that was irrelevant, and that even if this person could think that they wanted to consent while drunk, if they didn't remember it, then the law said that that didn't matter. So the problem is not the facts. The problem is her misunderstanding of the law. And then the fact that the fact pattern of the case fits perfectly into her misunderstanding. So taken together, her professional experience, her belief about the law, and her family experience, this member should not have sat in this court-martial. If there are no further questions, that concludes my rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. Now the matter is actually submitted. The court will be in recess until further order of the court.